Something else waited there for him, too. A 2-foot length of spear with a green and white tassel below the sharp head. He hefted it as he turned back to the courtyard. One of the maidens had carved the short shaft with dragons. Some people were already calling it the Dragon Scepter, especially Alenia and that lot. Rand kept the thing close to remind himself that he might have more enemies than those he could see.
"What farm are you talking about?"
Taim's voice grew harder.
"Where is it you mean to take me?"
For a long moment, Rand studied the man. He did not like Taim. Something in the fellow's manner would not allow it. Or maybe something in himself. For so long, he had been the only man who could even think of channeling without looking over his shoulder in a sweat for Aes Sedai. Well, it seemed a long time, and at least the Aes Sedai would not try to gentle him, not now that they knew who he was. Could it be as simple as that? Jealousy that he was no longer unique? He did not think so. Apart from everything else, he would welcome more men who could channel walking the earth unmolested. Finally, he would stop being a freak. No, it would not go that far, not this side of Tarmangaden. He was unique. He was the dragon reborn. Whatever his reasons, he just did not like the man.
"Kill him!" Luce Theron shrieked. "Kill them all!"
Rand pushed the voice back down. He did not have to like Taim, only to use him. And trust him. That was the hard part. "I'm taking you where you can serve me," he said coldly. Taim did not flinch or frown. He merely watched and waited, the corners of his mouth twitching for one moment in that almost smile. Chapter 3. A Woman's Eyes. Stilling his irritation and Luz Theron's mutters, Rand reached out for Sidene, launched himself into the now familiar battle for control and survival in the midst of emptiness. The taint oozed through him as he channeled. Even within the void he could feel it seeming to filter into his bones, perhaps into his soul. He had no way to describe what he did except as making a fold in the pattern, a hole through it. This he had learned on his own, and his teacher had not been very good at explaining even what lay behind the things he taught. A bright vertical line appeared in the air, widening quickly into an opening the size of a large doorway. In truth, it seemed to turn. The view through it, a sunlit clearing among drought-draggled trees, rotating to a halt. Anila and 2 more maidens lifted their veils and leaped through almost before it settled. 6 others followed, some with horn bows ready. Rand did not expect there to be anything for them to guard against. He had put the other end, if there was another end. He did not understand, but it seemed to him there was only one. In the clearing, because a gateway opening up could be dangerous around people. But telling the maidens, or any Aiel, that there was no need to be on guard was like telling a fish there was no need to swim. "This is a gateway," he told Taim. "I'll show you how to make one if you didn't catch it." The man was staring at him. If he had been watching carefully, he should have seen Rand's weaving of Sidene. Any man able to channel could do that. Taim joined him as he stepped through into the clearing, Sulin and the rest of the maidens following. Some gave the sword at Rand's hip a disdainful glance as they streamed past him, and maiden hand talk flashed silently among them. Disgustedly, no doubt. Anila and the foreguard had already spread out warily among the bedraggled trees. Their coats and breeches, the cadden sor, made them seem part of the shadows, whether or not they had added the green to the gray and brown. With the power in him, Rand could see each dead needle distinctly on each of the pines. More were dead than were alive. He could smell the sour sap of the leather leaves. The air itself smelled hot, dry, and dusty. There was no danger for him here.
"Wait, Randalthor!"
came a woman's urgent voice from the other side of the gateway. Avienda's voice. Rand let go of the weave and Sidene immediately, and the gateway winked out just as it had come. There were dangers and dangers. Taim looked at him curiously. Some of the maidens, veiled and unveiled, spared him a moment for looks of their own, disapproving ones. Fingers flashed in maiden hand talk. They had the sense to keep their tongues still, though. He had made himself clear on that. Ignoring curiosity and disapproval alike, Rand started off through the trees, with Taim at his side, dead leaves and twigs crackling as they went. The maidens, in a wide circle around them, made no sound in their soft boots, laced to the knee. Vigilance buried their moment of rebuke. Some had made this journey with Rand before, always without incident, but nothing would ever convince them these woods were not a good site for an ambush. Before Rand, life in the Waste had been nearly 3,000 years of raids, skirmishes, feuds, and wars, unbroken for any length of time. There were surely things he could learn from Taim, if not nearly so much as Taim thought, but the teaching would go both ways, and it was time for him to start educating the older man. "Sooner or later you will come up against the Forsaken following me, maybe before the last battle, probably before. You don't seem surprised."
"I have heard rumors. They had to break free eventually."
So the word was spreading. Rand grinned in spite of himself. The Aes Sedai would not be pleased. Aside from anything else, there was a certain pleasure in tweaking their noses. "You can expect anything at any time. Trollocs, Murdrol, Drugkar, Greymen, Golam." He hesitated, Heron-branded palm stroking his long sword hilt. He had no idea what a Golam was. Luce Theron had not stirred, but he knew that was the source of the name. Bits and pieces sometimes drifted across whatever thin barrier lay between him and that voice, and became part of Rand's memories, usually without anything to explain them. It happened more often lately. The fragments were not something he could fight, like the voice. The hesitation lasted only a moment. "Not just in the north, near the Blight. Here or anywhere, they are using the ways." That was something else he had to deal with. But how? First made with Saidin, the ways were dark now, as tainted as Saidin. The Shadow Spawn could not avoid all of the dangers in the ways that killed men or worse, yet they still managed to use them, and if the ways were not as quick as gateways in traveling, or even skimming, they still allowed hundreds of miles to be covered in a day. A problem for later. He had too many problems for later. He had too many problems for now. Irritably, he slashed at the leather leaf with the dragon scepter. Pieces of wide, tough leaves fell, most brown. "If you've ever heard a legend about it, expect it. Even dark hounds, though if they're really the Wild Hunt, at least the dark one isn't free to ride behind them. They're bad enough anyway. Some you can kill, the way the legends say. Some won't die for anything short of balefire, that I'm sure of." "Do you know balefire?" "If you don't, that is one thing I'll not teach you. If you do, don't use it on anything but Shadowspawn. And do not teach it to anyone. The source of some of those rumors you heard might be, I don't know what to call them except bubbles of evil. Think of them like the bubbles that sometimes rise up in a bog, only these are rising from the dark one as the seals weaken, and instead of rotten smells, they are full of, well, evil. They drift along the pattern until they burst, and when they do, anything can happen. Anything. Your own reflection can leap out of the mirror and try to kill you, believe me." If the litany dismayed Taim, he did not show it. All he said was, "I've been in the Blight. I've killed Trollocs before and Murdrol." He pushed a low branch out of the way and held it for Rand. "I have never heard of this balefire, but if a dark hound comes after me, I will find some way to kill it." "Good." That was for Taim's ignorance as much as his confidence. Balefire was one bit of knowledge Rand would not mind seeing vanish from the world completely. "With luck, you won't find anything like that out here, but you can never be sure." The woods gave way abruptly to a farmyard with a sprawling thatch-roofed house of two weathered stories, smoke rising from one of its chimneys, and a large barn that had a distinct lean. The day was no cooler here than in the city a few miles away, the sun no less blistering. Chickens scratched the dust, two dun cows chewed their cud in a rail-fenced enclosure, a flock of tethered black goats busily stripped leaves from bushes within their reach, and a high-wheeled cart stood in the barn shadow, but the place did not look like a farm. There were no fields in sight. Forest stretched all around the yard, broken only by the dirt track meandering northward, used for rare excursions to the city. And there were too many people. Four women, all but one in her middle years, were hanging wash on a pair of lines, and nearly a dozen children, none older than 9 or 10, played among the chickens. There were men about, too, most doing chores. 27 of them, though in some cases it was a stretch to call them men. Eben Hopwill, the skinny fellow pulling a bucket of water from the well, claimed to be 20, and was certainly 4 or 5 years younger. His nose and ears seemed the biggest parts of him. Fedwin Moore, one of three men sweating on the roof replacing old thatch, was a good deal huskier, with a good deal fewer blotches, but certainly no older. More than half of the men had only 3 or 4 years on those two. Rand had almost sent some of them home, Eben and Fedwin at least, save that the White Tower took novices as young and sometimes younger. Gray showed among darker hair on a few heads, and crease-faced Damer Flynn, in front of the barn using peeled branches, to show two of the younger men how to handle a sword, had a limp and retained only a thin fringe of white hair. Damer had been in the Queen's Guards until he took a Mirandian lance in his thigh. He was no swordsman, but he seemed competent to show the others how not to stab themselves in the foot. Most of the men were Andoran, a few Kyrenian. None had come from Tyr yet, though the amnesty had been proclaimed there, too. It would take time for men to come that far. Damer was the first to notice the maidens, tossing down his branch and directing his pupil's attention toward Rand. Then Eben dropped his bucket with a yell, splashing water all over himself, and everyone was scrambling, shouting at the house, to cluster anxiously behind Damer. Two more women appeared from inside, aproned and red-faced from cook fires, and helped the others gather the children behind the men. "There they are," Rand told Taim. "You have nearly half a day left. How many can you test? I want to know who can be taught as soon as possible." "This lot was dredged from the bottom of—" Taim began contemptuously, then stopped in the middle of the farmyard, staring at Rand. Chickens scratched in the dust around his feet. "You haven't tested any of them? Why in the name of—" "You cannot, can you? You can travel, but you do not know how to test for the talent." "Some don't really want a channel." Rand eased his grip on his sword hilt. He disliked admitting gaps in his knowledge to this man. "Some haven't thought beyond a chance at glory or wealth or power. But I want to keep any man who can learn, whatever his reasons." The students, the men who would be students, were watching him and Taim, from in front of the barn, with a fair approximation of calm. They had all come to Camlann hoping to learn from the Dragon Reborn, after all, or thinking they did. It was the maidens making a ring about the farmyard and prowling into the house and barn that caught their eyes with a wary fascination, even apprehension. The women clutched the children to their skirts, gazes fixed on Rand and Taim, expressions ranging from flat-eyed stares to anxious lip-chewing. "Come on," Rand said. "It's time to meet your students." Taim hung back. "Is this truly all you want me for? To try to teach these pathetic dregs, if any of them can be taught? How many do you really think to find in a handful that just straggled to you?" "This is important, Taim. I'd do it myself if I could, if I had time." Time was always key, always lacking. And he had made the admission, as much as it curdled his tongue. He realized he did not much like Taim, but he did not have to like him. Rand did not wait, and after a moment the other man caught up with long strides. "You mentioned trust. I'm trusting you with this." "Don't trust," Luz Theron panted in the dim recesses. "Never trust. Trust is death." "Test them and start teaching them as soon as you know who can learn."
"As the Lord Dragon wishes," Taim murmured wryly as they reached the waiting group. Bows and curtsies, none very polished, greeted them.
"This is Mazrim Taim,"
Rand announced. Jaws dropped and eyes widened, of course.
Some of the younger men stared as though they thought he and Taim had come there to fight. A few seemed to be looking forward to watching.
"Introduce yourselves to him. From today he will be teaching you."
Taim gave Rand a tight-mouthed look as the students slowly gathered before him and began giving their names.
In truth, the men's reactions varied. Fedwin pushed eagerly to the front, right alongside Damer, while Eben hung to the rear, face white. The others were somewhere in between, hesitant, uncertain, but speaking up finally.
Rand's declaration meant an end to weeks of waiting for some of them, to years of dreaming, perhaps.
Reality began today, and reality might mean channeling, with all that entailed for a man.
A stocky, dark-eyed man, 6 or 7 years older than Rand, ignored Taim and slipped away from the others. In a farmer's rough coat, Jur Grady shifted from foot to foot in front of Rand and twisted a cloth cap in blunt hands. He peered at the cap, or the ground under his worn boots, occasionally glancing up at Rand.
My Lord Dragon, I've been thinking, my pa is looking after McCroft. A good piece of land. If the stream don't dry up, there might be a crop yet. If it rains and...
He crushed the cap, then straightened it again carefully.
I've been thinking about going home.
The women were not gathering around Taim. In a silent line of worried eyes, they held hard to the children and watched. The youngest, a plump, pale-haired woman, a boy of 4 playing with her fingers, was Sora Grady. Those women had followed their husbands here, but Rand suspected that half of the talk between husband and wife eventually turned to leaving. 5 men had left already, and if none gave marriage as a reason, all had been married. What woman could be comfortable watching her husband wait to learn to channel? It must be like watching him wait to commit suicide. Some would say this was no place for families, yet most likely those same people would also say the men should not be here either. In Rand's opinion, the Aes Sedai had made a mistake, sealing themselves off from the world. Few entered the White Tower beyond Aes Sedai, women who wanted to be Aes Sedai and those who served them. Only a relative handful seeking help, and then under what they saw as great pressure. When Aes Sedai left the tower, most held themselves aloof, and some never did leave. To Aes Sedai, people were pieces in a game, and the world was the board, not a place to live in. To them, only the White Tower was real. No man could forget the world and ordinary people when he had his family in front of him. This only had to last until Tarmon Gaydon. How long? 1 year, 2? But the question was whether it could even do that. Somehow it would. He would make it last. Families reminded men what they were going to fight for. Sora's eyes were fastened on Rand.
"Go if you want to," he told Jur. "You can leave any time before you actually start learning to channel. Once you take that step, you're the same as a soldier. You know we'll need every soldier we can find before the last battle, Jur. The Shadow will have new dreadlords ready to channel. You can count on it. But it's your choice. Maybe you'll be able to sit it out on your farm. There must be a few places in the world that will escape what's coming. I hope so. Anyway, the rest of us will do our best to make sure as much escapes as possible. At least you can give your name to Taim, though. It would be a shame to leave before you even know whether you could learn." Turning away from Jur's confused face, Rand avoided Sora's eyes. "And you condemn Aes Sedai for manipulating people," he thought bitterly. He did what he had to do. Taim was still collecting names out of the shifting pack and still tossing barely subdued glares at Rand. Abruptly, Taim's patience seemed to give out.
"Enough of this. Names can come later, for those of you who will still be here tomorrow. Who is the first to be tested?"
Just that quickly, their tongues froze. Some did not even blink as they stared at him. Taim pointed a finger at Damer.
I might as well get you out of the way. Come here.
Damer did not move until Taim grabbed his arm and hauled him a few paces apart from the rest. Watching, Rand moved nearer, too.
The more power that's used, Taim told Damer, the easier it is to detect the resonance. On the other hand, too big a resonance could do unpleasant things to your mind, maybe kill you. So I'll start small.
Damer blinked. Plainly he barely understood a word, except maybe the part about unpleasant things and dying. Rand knew the explanation was meant for him, though. Taim was covering his ignorance. Abruptly, a tiny flame appeared, an inch tall, dancing in midair, equidistant between the three men. Rand could feel the power in Taim, though only a small amount, and see the thin flow of fire the man wove. The flame brought a startling relief to Rand, startling because it was proof Taim really could channel. Bashir's first doubts must have stuck in the back of his mind.
"Concentrate on the flame," Taim said. "You are the flame. The world is the flame. There is nothing but the flame."
"Don't feel nothing but an ache starting in my eyes," Damer muttered,
wiping sweat from his forehead with the back of a rough, calloused hand.
"Concentrate!" Taim snapped. "Do not talk, do not think, do not move. Concentrate!"
Damer nodded, then blinked at Taim's frown and froze, staring silently at the small flame. Taim seemed intent, but on what, Rand was not sure. He seemed to be listening. "A resonance," he had said. Rand focused, listening, feeling for something. Minutes stretched out, with none of them moving a muscle. 5, 6, 7 slow minutes, with Damer hardly even blinking. The old man breathed hard, and he sweated so much he looked as though someone had upended a bucket over his head. 10 minutes. Suddenly Rand felt it, the resonance. A small thing, a tiny echo of the minuscule flow of power pulsing in Taim, but this seemed to come from Damer. It had to be what Taim meant, but Taim did not move. Perhaps there was more, or maybe this was not what Rand thought. Another minute or two went by, and finally Taim nodded and let the flame and Sayadin go.
"You can learn. Damer, was it?"
He seemed surprised. No doubt he had not believed the very first man tested would pass, and a nearly bald old man at that. Damer grinned weakly. He looked like he might vomit.
"I suppose I shouldn't be surprised if every one of these simpletons passes," the hawk-nosed man muttered with a glance at Rand. "You seem to have luck enough for 10 men.
Boots shuffled uneasily among the rest of the simpletons. Undoubtedly, some were already hoping they would fail. They could not back out now, but if they failed, they could go home, knowing they had tried without having to face what came with passing. Rand felt a little surprise himself. There had not been anything more than that echo after all, and he had felt it before Taim, the man who knew what he was looking for.
"In time we'll find out how strong you can be," Taim said as Damer slipped back among the others.
They opened a little distance around him and did not meet his eyes.
"Perhaps you will turn out strong enough to match me or even the Lord Dragon here."
The space around Damer widened a fraction.
"Only time will tell. Pay attention while I test the others. If you are sharp, you should catch on to it by the time I find 4 or 5 more."
A quick look at Rand said that was meant for him.
"Now, who tests next?"
No one moved. The Saldaean stroked his chin.
"You!"
He pointed to a lumpy fellow somewhere well beyond 30, a dark-haired weaver named Kelly Hulden. In the line of women, Kelly's wife moaned.
26 more tests were going to take the rest of the daylight, maybe more.
Heat or no heat, the days still grew shorter, as if winter really was coming on, and a failed test would take a few minutes longer than one passed, just to make certain. Bashir was waiting, and there was Wairamon to visit yet, and...
"Carry on with this," Rand told Taim. "I will come back tomorrow to see how you've done. Remember the trust I'm putting in you."
"Don't trust him,"
Luz Theron groaned. The voice seemed to come from some capering figure in the shadow of Rand's head.
Don't trust. Trust is death.
Kill him. Kill them all.
Oh, to die and be done.
Done with it all.
Sleep without dreams. Dreams of Elena. Forgive me, Elena. No forgiveness. Only death. Deserve to die.
Rand turned away before the struggle inside could show on his face.
Tomorrow, if I can.
Taim caught up to him before he and the maidens were halfway back to the trees.
If you stay a little longer, you can learn the test.
Exasperation touched his voice. If I really do find four or five more anyway, which truly won't surprise me, you do seem to have the Dark One's own luck. I assume you want to learn, unless you mean to dump it all on my shoulders. I warn you, it will be slow. However hard I press, this Damer has days yet, weeks, before he can even sense Idine, much less seize it. Just seize it. Not channel even a spark.
I already picked up the test, Rand replied. It wasn't difficult.
And I do mean to put it all on your shoulders until you can find more and teach them enough so they can help you look. Remember what I said, Taim. Teach them fast.
There were dangers in that. Learning to channel the female half of the true source was learning an embrace, so Rand had been told. Learning to submit to something that would obey once you surrendered to it. It was guiding a huge force that would not harm you unless you misused it. Elaine and Egwene thought that natural. To Rand, it was almost beyond belief.
Channeling the male half was a constant war for control and survival. Leap into it too far, too fast, and you were a boy tossed naked into a pitched battle against armored foes. Even once you learned Sidene could destroy you, kill you, or obliterate your mind, if it did not simply burn the ability to channel from you. The same price that Aes Sedai exacted from the men they caught who could channel, you could exact from yourself in one careless moment, one instant of letting your guard down. Not that some of the men in front of the barn would not be willing to pay that price right that minute. Kelly Hulden's round-faced wife had him by the front of his shirt, talking urgently. Kelly was swinging his head uncertainly, and the other married men were looking uneasily toward their wives. But this was a war, and wars had casualties, even among married men.
Light, but he was growing calloused enough to sicken a goat.
He turned a little, so he did not have to see Sora Grady's eyes.
Walk the edge with them, he told Taim. Teach them as much as they can learn, as fast as they can learn it.
Taim's mouth tightened slightly at Rand's first words.
As much as they can learn, he said flatly. But what?
Things that can be used as weapons, I suppose.
Weapons, Rand agreed.
They had to be weapons, all of them, himself included. Could weapons allow themselves families? Could a weapon allow itself to love?
Now where had that come from?
Anything they can learn, but that most of all.
They were so few.
27, and if there was even one more than Damer who could learn, Rand would thank his being Taviren for drawing the man to him. Aes Sedai only caught in gentlemen who actually channeled, but they had become very good at it over the last 3,000 years. Some Aes Sedai apparently believed they were succeeding in something they had never intended, culling the ability to channel out of humanity. The White Tower had been built to house 3,000 Aes Sedai all the time, and far more if all their numbers had to be called in, with rooms for hundreds of girls in training. But before the split, there had only been 40 or so novices in the tower, and fewer than 50 accepted.
I need more numbers, Taim. One way or another, find more.
Teach them the test before anything else.
You mean to try matching the Aes Sedai, then?
Taim seemed unperturbed, even if that was Rand's plan. His dark, tilted eyes were steady.
How many Aes Sedai are there altogether? 1,000?
Not so many, I think, Taim said cautiously. Culling the human race.
Burn them for it, even if they had cause. Well, there will be enemies enough anyway.
One thing he did not lack was enemies. The Dark One and the Forsaken, Shadowspawn and Dark Friends. The White Cloaks certainly, and very likely Aes Sedai, or some of them, those who were Black Aja, and those who wanted to control him. Those last he counted enemies, even if they did not think of themselves so. There surely would be dreadlords, just as he had said, and more beyond that. Enemies enough to crush all his plans, crush everything. His grip tightened on the carved haft of the dragon scepter. Time was the greatest enemy of all, the one he had the least chance of defeating. "I am going to defeat them, Taim. All of them. They think they can tear everything down. It's always tearing down, never building up. I am going to build something, leave something behind. Whatever happens, I will do that. I'll defeat the Dark One, and cleanse Saiyadeen so men don't have to fear going mad, and the world doesn't have to fear men channeling. I'll—" The green and white tassel swung as he angrily jerked the length of spear. It was impossible. The heat and dust mocked him. Some of it had to be done, but it was all impossible. The best any of them could hope for was to win and die before they went mad. And he did not see how to manage even that much. All he could do was keep trying. There should be a way, though. If there was such a thing as justice, there should be a way.
"Cleanse Saiyadeen," Taim said softly. "I think that would take more power than you can imagine."
His eyes lidded thoughtfully.
"I have heard of things called Sa'angreal. Do you have one you think could actually—"
"Never mind what I have or don't have," Rand snapped. "You teach whoever can learn, Taim. Then find more and teach them. The Dark One won't wait on us. Light, we don't have enough time, Taim, but we have to make do. We have to."
"I will do what I can. Just do not expect Daemar to topple a city's walls tomorrow."
Rand hesitated. "Taim, keep a watch out for any student who learns too fast. Let me know immediately. One of the Forsaken might try to slip in among the students."
"One of the Forsaken?"
It was almost a whisper. For the second time, Taim looked shaken, this time well and truly taken aback.
"Why would—"
"How strong are you?" Rand broke in. "See Saiyadeen. Do it. As much as you can hold." For a moment, Taim only looked at him, expressionless. Then the power flooded into him. There was no glow such as women could see around one another, only a sense of force and menace. But Rand could feel it clearly and judge it. Taim held enough of Saiyadeen to devastate the farm and everyone there in seconds, enough to lay waste as far as he could see. It was not much short of what Rand himself could manage, unaided. But then the man could be holding back. There was no sense of strain, and he might not want to show his full strength to Rand. How could he know how Rand might react? Saiyadeen, the sense of it, faded from Taim, and for the first time Rand realized that he himself was filled with the male half of the source, a raging flood, every thread he could pull through the Angreal in his pocket.
"Kill him," Luce Theron muttered. "Kill him now!"
For a moment, shock gripped Rand. The emptiness surrounding him wavered. Saiyadeen raged and swelled, and he barely released the power before it could crush the void and him both. Had he seized the power, or had Luce Theron?
"Kill him! Kill him!"
In a fury, Rand screamed inside his head,
"Shut up!"
To his surprise, the other voice vanished. Sweat rolled down his face, and he wiped it away with a hand that wanted to shake. He had grasped the source himself. It had to have been so. A dead man's voice could not have done it. Unconsciously, he had not been willing to trust Taim holding so much of Saiyadeen while he stood helpless. That was it. "Just you keep an eye out for anyone who learns too fast," he muttered. Maybe he was telling Taim too much, but people had a right to know what they might face. As much as they needed to know. He dared not allow Taim or anyone else to find out where he had learned much of what he knew. If they discovered that he had held one of the Forsaken prisoner and allowed him to escape, rumor would strip away mention of prisoners if that leaked out. The White Cloaks claimed he was a false dragon, and very likely a dark friend besides. They said as much of anyone who touched the One Power. If the world learned about Asmodian, many more might believe. Never mind that Rand had needed a man to teach him of Saiyadeen. No woman could have, any more than they could see his weavings or he theirs.
"Men believe the worst easily,"
and women believe it hides something still darker. That was an old Two Rivers saying. He would deal with Asmodean himself if the man ever turned up again. Just keep an eye out. Quietly.
As my Lord Dragon commands.
The man actually bowed slightly before starting back across the farmyard. Rand realized the maidens were looking at him. Enyla and Somara, Sulin and Jelani, and all the rest, concern filling their eyes. They accepted almost everything he did, all the things that made him flinch when he did them, all the things everyone but the Aiel flinched at. What put their hackles up were usually matters he did not understand at all. They accepted and worried about him.
"You must not tire yourself," Somara said quietly.
Rand looked at her, and the flaxen-haired woman's cheeks reddened. This might not count as a public place. Taim was already too distant to overhear, but the remark was still going too far. Enyla, though, pulled a spare shufa from her belt and handed it to him. "Too much sun is not good for you," she murmured. One of the others muttered, "He needs a wife to look after him." He could not tell which. Even Somara and Enyla can find that sort of talk behind his back. He knew who was meant, though. Avienda. Who better to marry the son of a maiden than a maiden who had given up the spear to become a wise one? Suppressing a flash of anger, he wound the shufa around his head and was grateful for it. The sun truly was hot, and the gray-brown cloth deflected a surprising amount of the heat. His sweat dampened it immediately. Did Taim know something like the Aes Sedai trick of not letting heat or cold touch them? Saldea was far in the north, yet the man hardly seemed to perspire as much as the Aiel. Despite his gratitude, what Rand said was, "What I must not do is stand around here wasting time."
"Wasting time," young Jelani said, in a too innocent voice, rewinding her shufa and momentarily exposing short hair nearly as red as Anila's. "How can the Karakhan be wasting time? The last time I sweated as much as he is, I had run from sun up to sundown."
Grins and outright laughter spread through the other maidens, red-haired Mera, at least 10 years older than Rand, slapping her thigh, golden-haired Desora, hiding her smiles behind a hand as she always did. Scar-faced Laya, bouncing up and down on her toes, while Sulin almost doubled over. Aiel humor was strange at best. Heroes in stories never had jokes made at their expense, not even odd ones, and he doubted kings did either. Part of the problem was that an Aiel chief, even the Karakarn, was not a king. He might have the authority of one in many ways, but any Aiel could and would walk up to a chief and say exactly what he thought. The bigger part, however, was something else. Despite his having been raised in the Two Rivers by Tam-O-Thor, and until her death when he was 5, Tam's wife, Carrie, Rand's true mother had been a maiden of the spear who died giving birth to him on the slopes of Dragonmount. Not an Aiel, though his father had been, but still a maiden. Now Aiel customs, stronger than law, had touched him. No, not touched him, enveloped. No maiden could marry and still carry the spear, and unless she gave up the spear, any child she bore was given to another woman by the wise ones, in such a way that the maiden never knew who that woman was. Any child born of a maiden was believed to be lucky, both in itself and to raise, though none but the woman who raised the child and her husband ever knew it was not her own. Yet beyond that, the Aiel prophecy of Rudion said that the Karakarn would be such a one, raised by wetlanders. To the maidens, Rand was all those children come back, the first child of a maiden ever to be known to everyone. Most, whether older than Sulin or as young as Jelani, welcomed him like a long-lost brother. In public, they gave him as much respect as they did any chief, marginal as that might be sometimes, but alone with them, he might as well have been that brother, though whether he was a younger brother or an older did not seem to have anything to do with the woman's own age. He was just glad that only a handful took Enyla and Somara's path. Alone or not, it was plain irritating to have a woman no older than himself behaving as though he were her son. "Then we ought to go somewhere I won't sweat," he said, managing a grin. He owed it to them. Some had already died for him, and more would before it was done. The maidens quickly subdued their mirth, ready to go where the Kara Khan said, ready to defend him. The question was where to go. Bashir was waiting for his carefully casual visit, but if Avienda had heard about that, she might well be with Bashir. Rand had been avoiding her as much as possible, especially being alone with her, because he wanted to be alone with her. He had managed to keep that from the maidens so far. If they ever so much as suspected, they would make his life miserable. The fact was, he had to stay away from her. He carried death with him like a contagious disease. He was a target, and people died near him. He had to harden his heart and let maidens die. The light burn him forever for that promise. But Avienda had given up the spear to study with the wise ones. He was not sure what he felt for her, only that if she died because of him, something in him would die too. It was lucky that she had no emotional tangles where he was concerned. She tried to stay close to him only because the wise ones wanted her to watch him for them, and because she wanted to watch him for Elaine. Neither reason made the situation any easier for Rand. Exactly the opposite. The decision was easy, really. Bashir would have to wait, so he could avoid Avienda, and the visit to Wairamun, intended to begin in the palace with attempts at stealth meant to be pierced, would come now. A foolish reason to make a decision, but what was a man to do when a woman refused to see sense? It might work out for the best this way. Those who were supposed to learn of that visit still would, and perhaps believe, what they were supposed to all the more because it was made in true concealment. Perhaps the call on Bashir and the Saldaeans would even seem more casual because he left it until late in the day. Yes. Twists within twists, worthy of a Karienin playing the game of houses. Seizing Saidin, he opened a gateway, the slash of light widening to show the interior of a large green-striped tent, empty save for a carpeting of colorful rugs woven in Tyran maize patterns. There was no chance of an ambush in that tent, less even than around the farm, but Anila and Mera and others still veiled themselves and darted through. Rand paused to look back. Kelly Huldin was making his way toward the farmhouse, head down, and his wife herding their two children at his side. She kept reaching over to pat him consolingly, but even across the farmyard, Rand could make out her beaming face. Plainly, Kelly had failed. Taim was facing Jer Grady, both staring at a tiny flame wavering between them. Sora Grady, her son clasped to her breast, was not watching her husband. Her eyes were still locked on Rand. A woman's eyes cut deeper than a knife. Another Two Rivers saying. Stepping through the gateway, he waited for the rest of the maidens to follow, then released the source. He did what he had to do. Chapter 4. A Sense of Humor. The tent's dim interior was hot enough to make Camelin, some 800 miles or so north, seem pleasantly cool, and when Rand pushed the flap open, he blinked. The sun was a hammer that made him glad of the shufa. A copy of the dragon banner hung above the green-striped tent alongside one of the crimson banners, bearing the ancient Aes Sedai symbol. More tents stretched across a rolling plain where all but a few tufts of tough grass had long since been beaten to dust by hooves and boots. Peak-roofed tents and flat, most white by far, if often dirty white, but many in colors or stripes, tents and the colorful banners of lords. An army had gathered here on the border of Tyr, on the edge of the plains of Moredo, thousands upon thousands of soldiers from Tyr and Cairhien. The Aiel had made their own camps well away from the wetlanders, 5 Aiel for every Tyran and Cairhienin, and more arriving by the day. It was an army to make Ilion shake in its boots, a host already mighty enough to smash anything in its path. Enila and the rest of the foreguard were already outside, veils down, with a dozen or so Aielmen. The Aiel kept a constant guard on this tent. Clothed and armed like the maidens, they were as tall as Rand, or taller. Lions, to the maidens, leopards. Hard-faced, sun-dark men with cold eyes of blue or green or gray. Today they were Shamad Kanda, Thunderwalkers, led by Roydan himself, who headed the society this side of the Dragon Wall. The maidens carried the honor of the Karakarn, but every warrior society demanded some share of the guard duty. One thing about some of the men's garb differed from the maidens. Half wore a crimson cloth, knotted around their temples with the ancient Aes Sedai symbol, a black and white disc, above their brows. It was a new thing, first seen only a few months earlier. Wearers of the headband considered themselves Siswayaman, in the old tongue, the spears of the dragon. The spears owned by the dragon might be closer. The headbands and their meaning made Rand uncomfortable, but there was little he could do when the men refused even to admit they were wearing them. Why no maidens had donned the things, none he had seen at least, he had no idea. They were almost as reluctant to talk about it as the men.
"I see you, Rand Althor," Roydan said gravely.
There was considerably more gray than yellow in Roydan's hair, but a blacksmith could have used the heavy-shouldered man's face for hammer or anvil, and by the scars across his cheeks and nose it seemed possible that more than one had. Icy blue eyes made his face soft by comparison. He avoided looking at Rand's sword.
"May you find shade this day."
That had nothing to do with the molten sun or the cloudless sky. Roydan did not seem to sweat at all. It was simply a greeting among people from a land where the sun was always baking hot and a tree rare. Equally formal, Rand replied,
"I see you, Roydan. May you find shade this day. Is the High Lord Wyroman about?"
Roydan nodded toward a large pavilion with red-striped sides and a crimson roof, ringed by men with tall spears, slanted precisely, shoulder to shoulder in the burnished breastplates and gold and black coats of Tyran Defenders of the Stone. Above it, the three crescents of Tyr, white on red and gold, and the many-rayed rising sun of Kyrian, gold on blue, flanked Rand's own scarlet flag, all three twitching in a breeze that might have come from an oven.
"The Wetlanders are all there."
Looking Rand straight in the eyes, Roydan added,
"Bruan has not been asked to that tent in 3 days, Randall Thor."
Bruan was clan chief of the Nekai Aiel, Roydan's clan. They were both salt flat sept.
"Nor has Han of the Tomanel, or Derek of the Rain, or any clan chief."
"I will speak with them," Rand said. "Will you tell Bruan and the others I am here?"
Roydan nodded gravely. Eyeing the men sideways, Enyla leaned close to Jelani, then spoke in a whisper that could have been heard clearly at 10 paces.
"Do you know why they are called Thunderwalkers? Because even when they are standing still, you keep looking to the sky, expecting to see lightning."
The maidens hooted with laughter. A young Thunderwalker leaped into the air, kicking a soft knee-high boot higher than Rand's head. He was handsome except for the puckered white scar that ran up under the strip of black cloth covering a missing eye. He wore the headband, too.
"Do you know why maidens use hand talk?" he shouted at the top of his leap.
And, landing, he put on a befuddled grimace. Not directed at the maidens, though. He spoke to his companions, ignoring the women.
"Because even when they are not talking, they cannot stop talking."
The Shamad Kanda laughed as hard as the maidens had.
"Only Thunderwalkers would see honor in guarding an empty tent," Enyla told Jelani sadly, shaking her head. "The next time they call for wine, if the Gaishain bring them empty cups, they will no doubt get drunker than we can on Usquai."
Apparently the Thunderwalkers thought Enyla had gained the best of the exchange. The one-eyed man and several others raised their bull-hide bucklers toward her and rattled spears against them. For her part, she simply listened a moment, then nodded to herself and fell in with the others as they followed Rand. Musing to himself about Aiel humor, Rand studied the sprawling camp. The aromas of food drifted from hundreds of scattered cook fires, bread baking in coals, meat roasting on spits, soup bubbling in kettles hung on tripods. Soldiers always ate well and often when they could. Campaigning usually brought scant meals. The fires added their own sweetish smells. There was more dried ox dung to burn on the plains of Moredo than wood. Here and there, archers or crossbowmen or pikemen moved about in leather jerkins sewn with steel discs or simply padded coats. But Tyran and Cariennan nobles alike despised foot and lauded horse, so mounted men were most in evidence. Tyrans in helmets rimmed and ridged, and breastplates over fat-sleeved coats striped in the colors of their various lords. Cariennan in dark coats and battered breastplates and helmets like bells cut away to expose their faces. Small banners called khan, on short staffs, fastened to some men's backs, marked minor Cariennan nobility and younger sons, and sometimes merely officers, though few Cariennan commoners rose to rank. Or Tyran, for that matter. The two nationalities did not mingle, and while the Tyrans often slouched in their saddles and always directed a sneer at any Cariennan who came near, the shorter Cariennan sat their horses stiffly, as though straining for the last inch of height, and ignored the Tyrans completely. They had fought more than one war against each other before Rand made them ride together. Roughly dressed, grizzled old men, and some little more than boys, went poking around the tents with stout sticks, one or another now and again scaring up a rat that he chased down and clubbed, before adding it to the others dangling from his belt. A big-nosed fellow in a stained leather vest and no shirt, bow in hand and quiver at his waist, laid a long string of crows and ravens tied together by the feet on a table in front of one tent and received a purse in exchange from the bored-looking, helmetless Tyran behind it. Few this far south really believe Murdrall used rats and ravens and such for spies. Light, except for those who had actually seen them, almost no one this far south truly believed in Murdrall or Trollocs. But if the Lord Dragon wanted the camp kept clear of the creatures, they were happy to oblige, especially since the Lord Dragon paid in silver for every corpse. Cheers rose, of course. No one else would be walking about with an escort of Maidens of the Spear, and there was the Dragon Scepter. The light illumine the Lord Dragon, and grace favor the Lord Dragon, and the like, showered from every side. Many even sounded sincere, though it was difficult to tell with men bellowing at the top of their lungs. Others only stared woodenly or turned their horses and rode away, not too fast. After all, there was no telling when he might decide to call down lightning or make the ground split open. Men who channeled did go mad, and who knew what a madman might do or when. Whether cheering or not, they eyed the maidens warily. Few had really grown accustomed to seeing women carrying weapons like men. Besides, everyone knew Aiel were every bit as unpredictable as madmen. The noise was not enough to keep Rand from hearing what the maidens were saying behind him. "He has a fine sense of humor. Who is he?" That was Anila. "His name is Lyran," Samara said. "A Kosada Charin. You think he has humor because he thought your joke better than his. He does look to have strong hands." Several of the maidens chortled. "Do you not think Anila funny, Randall Thor?" Sulin was striding at his side. "You did not laugh. You never laugh. Sometimes I do not think you have a sense of humor." Stopping dead, Rand rounded on them so suddenly that several reached for their veils and looked about for what had startled him. He cleared his throat. An irascible old farmer named Hugh discovered one morning that his best rooster had flown into a tall tree beside his farm pond and wouldn't come down. So he went to his neighbor Will and asked for help. The men had never gotten along, but Will finally agreed. So the two men went to the pond and began climbing the tree, Hugh first. They meant to frighten the rooster out, you see, but the bird only kept flying higher, branch by branch. Then, just as Hugh and the rooster reached almost the very top of the tree, with Will right behind, there was a loud crack. The branch, under Hugh's feet, broke away, and down he went into the pond, splashing water and mud everywhere. Will scrambled down as fast as he could and reached out to Hugh from the bank, but Hugh just lay there on his back, sinking deeper into the mud until only his nose stuck out of the water. Another farmer had seen what happened, and he came running and pulled Hugh out of the pond. "Why didn't you take Will's hand?" he asked Hugh. "You could have drowned." "Why should I take his hand now?" Hugh grumped. "I passed him just a moment ago in broad daylight, and he never spoke a word to me." He waited expectantly. The maidens exchanged blank looks. Finally, Samara said, "What happened with the pond? Surely the water is the point of this story." Throwing up his hands, Rand started for the red-striped pavilion again. Behind him, he heard Laia say, "I think it was supposed to be a joke." "How can we laugh when he doesn't know what happened to the water?" Mara said. "It was the rooster," Anila put in. "Wetlander humor is strange. I think it was something about the rooster." He tried to stop listening. The defenders stiffened even more rigidly at his approach, if that was possible, and the two standing before the gold-fringed entry flaps stepped aside smoothly, pulling them open. Their eyes stared past the Aiel women. Rand had led the defenders of the stone once, in a desperate fight against Myrdral and Trollocs in the halls of the Stone of Tyr itself. They would have followed anyone who stepped forward to lead that night, but it had been him. "The stone still stands," he said quietly. That had been their battle cry. Quick smiles flashed across some of those faces before they snapped back to wooden stillness. In Tyr, commoners did not smile at what a lord said unless absolutely sure the lord wanted them to smile. Most of the maidens squatted easily outside, spears across their knees, a posture they could hold for hours without moving a muscle. But Sulin followed Rand inside with Laia, Anila, and Jelani. If those defenders had all been childhood friends of Rand, the maidens would have been as cautious— but the men inside were not friends at all. Colorful fringed carpets floored the pavilion, Tyran mazes and elaborate scrollwork patterns, and in the middle sat a massive table, heavily carved and gilded and garishly inlaid with ivory and turquoise, that very likely needed a wagon all to itself for transport. The map-covered table separated a dozen sweaty-faced Tyrans from half as many Kyrianen, who suffered even more from the heat, each man holding a golden goblet that self-effacing servants in black and gold livery kept filled with punch. All the nobles were in silk, but the clean-shaven Kyrianen, short, slight, and pale compared to the men on the other side of the table, wore coats dark and sober, except for bright horizontal slashes of their house colors across the chest, the number indicating the rank of the house, while the Tyrans, most with beards oiled and trimmed to neat points, wore padded coats that were a garden of red and yellow and green and blue, satin and brocade, silver thread and thread of gold. The Kyrianen were solemn, even dour, most gaunt-cheeked, and each with the front of his head shaved and powdered, in what had once been the fashion only among soldiers in Kyrian, not lords. The Tyrans smiled and sipped scented handkerchiefs and pomanders that filled the pavilion with heavy aromas. Beside the punch, the one thing they seemed to have in common was flat-eyed stares for the maidens, followed hard by the pretense that the Aiel were invisible. The High Lord Wyreman, oiled beard and hair-streaked gray, bowed deeply. He was one of four High Lords there, in elaborately silver-worked boots, the others being unctuous, overly plump Sunamon, Tolmaron, whose iron-gray beard seemed a spear-point on the shaft of his leanness, and potato-nosed Torion, who looked more a farmer than most farmers, but Rand had given Wyreman the command. For the time being. The other eight were lesser lords, some clean-shaven, though with no less gray in their hair. They were here through their oaths of fealty to one or another of the High Lords, yet they all had some experience of fighting. Wyreman was not short for a tyrant, though Rand stood a head taller, but he always reminded Rand of a banty rooster, all puffed out chest and strutting. "All hail the Lord Dragon," he intoned, bowing. "Soon to be conqueror of Ilion. All hail, Lord of the Morning."
The rest were no more than a breath behind, Tyrans spreading arms wide, Kariennan touching hand to heart. Rand grimaced. Lord of the Morning had been one of Luz Theron's titles, or so the fragmentary history said. A great deal of knowledge had been lost in the breaking of the world, and more went up in smoke during the Trolloc Wars and later during the War of the Hundred Years. Yet surprising shards sometimes survived. He was surprised that Wyraman's use of the title had not brought Luz Theron's mad yammering. Come to think of it, Rand had not heard that voice since shouting at it. As far as he could recall, that was the first time he had ever actually addressed the voice sharing his head. The possibilities behind that sent a chill down his back.
"My Lord Dragon,"
Suniman dry-washed fleshy hands. He seemed to be trying not to see the shufa wrapped around Rand's head.
"Are you—"
Swallowing his words, he put on an ingratiating smile. Asking a potential madman, potential at the very least, whether he was well was perhaps not what he wanted to say.
"Would the Lord Dragon like some punch? A Lodenile vintage mixed with honey melon."
A lanky lord of the land sworn to Suniman, a man named Estevan, with a hard jaw and harder eyes, motioned sharply, and a servant darted for a golden goblet from a side table against the canvas wall. Another hurried to fill it. "No," Rand said. Then more strongly, "No!" He waved the servant away without really seeing him. Had Luz Theron actually heard? Somehow that made the whole thing worse. He did not want to think about the possibility now. He did not want to think of it at all. "As soon as Hearn and Simon get here, almost everything will be in place. Those two High Lords should be arriving soon." They led the last large parties of Tyran soldiers to have left Kyrian over a month ago. Of course, there were smaller groups on the way south, and more Kyrianin. More Aiel, too. The stream of Aiel would draw things out. "I want to see..." Abruptly, he realized the pavilion had gone very quiet, very still, except for Torion suddenly tipping back his head to gulp down the rest of his punch. He scrubbed a hand across his mouth and held out the goblet for more, but the servants seemed to be trying to fade into the red-striped walls. Sulin and the other three maidens were suddenly up on their toes, ready to veil. "What is it?" he asked quietly. Wyraman hesitated.
"Simon and Hearn have gone to Haddonmerk. They are not coming."
Torion snatched a worked gold pitcher from one of the servants and filled his own goblet, slopping punch under the carpets. "And why have they gone there instead of coming here?" Rand did not raise his voice. He was sure he knew the answer. Those two, and five more High Lords besides, had been sent to Kyrian mainly to occupy minds set to plot against him. Malicious smiles flickered among the Kyrianin, most half-hidden in quickly raised goblets. Samaradrid, the highest ranking, slashes of color on his coat to below the waist, wore his sneer openly. A long-faced man with white streaks at his temples and dark eyes that could chip stone, he moved stiffly from wounds suffered in his land's civil war, but his limp came from fighting Tyr. His main reason for cooperating with the Tyrans was that they were not Aiel. But then the Tyran's main reason for cooperating was that the Kyrianin were not. It was one of Samaradrid's countrymen who answered, a young lord named Meneril, who had half Samaradrid's stripes on his coat, and on his face a scar from the civil war that pulled up the left corner of his mouth in a permanent sardonic smile. "Treason, my Lord Dragon. Treason and rebellion." Wyraman might have been hesitant about saying those words to Rand's face, yet he was not about to let an outlander speak for him.
"Yes, rebellion," he said hurriedly,
glaring at Meneril, but his usual pomposity quickly returned.
"And not only them, my Lord Dragon. The High Lords Darlan and Tedosian and the High Lord Astanda are in it too. Burn my soul. But they all put their names to a letter of defiance. It seems some 20 or 30 minor nobles are involved as well, some little more than jumped-up farmers, like blasted fools."
Rand almost admired Darlan.
The man had opposed him openly from the start, fleeing the stone when it fell and trying to rouse resistance among the country nobles. Todosian and Astanda were different. Like Hearn and Simon, they had bowed and smiled, called him Lord Dragon, and plotted behind his back. Now his forbearance was repaid. No wonder Torian was spilling punch over his white-streaked beard as he drank. He had been involved deeply with Todosian, and with Hearn and Simon, for that matter.
"They wrote more than defiance," Tolmeron said in a cold voice. "They wrote that you are a false dragon, that the fall of the stone and your drawing of the sword that is not a sword were some Aes Sedai trick."
There was a hint of question in his voice. He had not been in the Stone of Tyr the night it fell to Rand.
"What do you believe, Tolmeron?"
It was a seductive claim in a land where channeling had been outlawed before Rand changed the law, and Aes Sedai were at best tolerated, where the Stone of Tyr had stood invincible for close to 3,000 years before Rand took it. And a familiar claim. Rand wondered whether he would find white cloaks when these rebels were laid by the heels. He thought Pedro Nile might be too smart to allow that.
"I think you drew Kalendor," the lean man said after a moment. "I think you are the dragon reborn."
Both times there was a slight emphasis on think. Tolmeron had courage. Estefan nodded, slowly, but he did. Another brave man. Even they did not ask the obvious question, though, whether Rand wanted the rebels rooted out. Rand was not surprised. For one thing, Haddon Merc was no easy place to root anyone out of. A huge, tangled forest, lacking villages, roads, or even paths. In the choppy mountainous terrain along its northernmost edge, a man would be lucky to cover a handful of miles in a long day, and armies could maneuver until their food ran out without finding one another. Perhaps more importantly, whoever asked that question could be suspected of volunteering to lead the expedition, and a volunteer could be suspected of wanting to join Darlan, not lay him by the heels. Tyrians might not play Deus de Mar, the game of houses, the way the Kyrianen did. That lot read volumes in a glance and heard more in a sentence than you ever meant to put there. But they still schemed and watched one another, suspicious of schemes, and they believed everyone else did the same. Still, it suited Rand to leave the rebels where they were for now. All of his attention had to be on Ilion. It had to be seen to be there. But he could not be seen as soft, either. These men would not turn on him, but last battle or no last battle, only two things kept the Tyrans and Kyrianen from each other's throats. They preferred each other to Aielman, if barely, and they feared the wrath of the Dragon Reborn. If they lost that fear, they would be trying to kill one another and the Aiel before you could say Jack of the Mists. "Does anyone speak in their defense?" he asked. "Does anyone know any mitigation?" If any did, they held their tongues. Counting the servants, nearly 2 dozen pairs of eyes watched him, waiting. Perhaps the servants most intently of all. Sulin and the maidens watched everything except him. "Their titles are forfeited, their lands and estates confiscated. Arrest warrants are to be signed for every man whose name is known, and every woman." That could present a problem. The penalty in Tyr for rebellion was death. He had changed some laws, but not that one, and it was too late now. "Publish it, that whoever kills one of them will be absolved of murder, and whoever aids them will be charged with treason. Any who surrender will be spared their lives," which might solve the difficulty of Astanda. He would not order a woman executed, if he could work how to manage it. "But those who persist will hang." The nobles shifted uneasily and exchanged glances, whether Tyran or Kyrianen. Blood drained from more than one face. They had certainly expected the death sentences. There could be no less for rebellion, and with war in the offing. But the stripping of titles plainly shocked them. Despite all the laws Rand had changed in both lands, despite lords hauled before magistrates and hanged for murder or fined for assault, they still thought there was some difference bred in the bone, some natural order that made them lions by right and commoners sheep. A High Lord who went to the gibbet died a High Lord, but Darlin and the others would die peasants in these men's eyes, a much worse fate than the dying itself. The servants remained poised with their pitchers, waiting to refill any goblet that had to be tilted very far in drinking. Features as expressionless as ever, there seemed to be a cheerfulness in some of those eyes not there before. "Now that that's settled," Rand said, dragging off the shufa as he went to the table, "let's see the maps. Samael is more important than a handful of fools rotting in Haddon Merc." He hoped they did rot. Burn them. Wyramon's mouth tightened, and Tolmaron quickly smoothed out a frown. Suneman's face was so smooth it might have been a mask. The other Tyrans looked as doubtful, and the Kariennan as well, though Simaradrid hit it well. Some had seen Murdral and Trollocs during that attack on the stone, and some had seen his duel with Samael at Kyrian. Yet they thought his claim the Forsaken were loose a symptom of insanity. He had heard whispers that he had wrought all the destruction at Kyrian himself, striking out maniacally at friend and foe alike. Going by Lya's stony face, one of them was going to get a maiden's spear through him, if they did not guard those looks. They gathered around the table, though, as he tossed down the shufa and rummaged through the maps scattered in layers. Bashir was right. Men would follow madmen who won, so long as they won. Just as he found the map he wanted, a detailed drawing of the eastern end of Ilion, the Aiel chiefs arrived. Bruan of the Nakai Aiel was first to enter, followed closely by Geron of the Sharad, Derek of the Rain, Han of the Tomanel, and Erim of the Charin. Each acknowledged the nods of Sulin and the three maidens. Bruan, a massive man with sad gray eyes, really was the leader of the five clans Rand had sent south so far. None of the others objected. Bruan's oddly placid manner belied his battle skills. Clothed in the cotton sore, shufa hanging loose about their necks, they were unarmed except for their heavy belt knives, but then an Aiel was hardly unarmed even when he had only his hands and feet. The Kyrianans simply pretended they were not there, but the Tyrans made a point of sneering and sniffing ostentatiously at their pomanders and scented handkerchiefs. Tyr had lost only the stone to the Aiel, and that with the aid of the dragon reborn, as they believed, or of Aes Sedai. But Kyrian had twice been ravaged by them, twice defeated and humiliated. Except for Han, the Aiel ignored them all. Han, white-haired and with a face like creased leather, glared murderously. He was a prickly man at best, and it might not have helped that some of the Tyrans were as tall as he. Han was short for an Aiel, which meant well above average for a wetlander, and as touchy about it as an Ayla. And, of course, Aiel despised tree-killers, one of their names for Kyrianan, beyond any other wetlanders. Their other name for them was Oathbreakers. "The Ilioners," Rand said firmly, smoothing the map out. He used the dragon scepter to hold down one end, and a gold-mounted inkpot and matching sand bowl for the other. He did not need these men to start killing each other. He did not think they would, while he was there at least. In stories, allies eventually came to trust and like one another. He doubted these men ever would. The rolling plains of Moredo extended a little distance into Ilion, giving way to forested hills well short of the Manetherandrel, and the river Shal, branching off from it. Five inked crosses, about 10 miles apart, marked the eastern edge of those hills, the Dwarlan Hills. Rand put his finger on the middle cross. "Are you sure Samael has not added any new camps?" A slight grimace on Wyraman's face made him snap irritably. "Lord Brend, if you prefer, then, or the Council of Nine, or Matin Stepaneos, Dane Balgar, if you want the king himself. Are they still like this?"
"Our scouts say so," Geron said calmly.
Slender as a blade is slender, his light brown hair heavily streaked with gray, he was always calm, now that the Sharad's 400-year blood feud with the Goshin Aiel had ended with Rand's coming. "Sovin Nai and Dwada Madin," Keep a close watch. He nodded slightly in satisfaction, and so did Derek. Jaron had been Sovin Nai, a knife hand before becoming chief, and Derek Duwada Madin, a water seeker.
We know any changes in 5 days by runners.
My scouts believe they are,
Wireman said, as if Jaron had not spoken.
I send a new troop every week. It takes a full month for them to come and go, but I assure you, I am as up-to-date as the distance allows.
The Aiel's faces might have been carved from stone. Rand ignored the interplay. He had tried before to hammer shut the gaps between Tyran, Karienin, and Aiel, and they always sprang apart as soon as his back turned. It was useless effort. As for the camps, he knew there were still only 5. He had visited them, in a manner of speaking. There was a place that he knew how to enter, a strange, unpeopled reflection of the real world, and he had walked the wooden walls of those massive hell forts there. He knew the answers to almost every question he intended to ask, but he was juggling plans within plans like a gleeman juggling fire.
And Samael is still bringing more men up?
This time he emphasized the name. The Aiel's expressions did not change. If the Forsaken were loose, the Forsaken were loose. The world had to be faced as it was, not as you wished it to be. But the others darted those quick, worried glances at him.
They had to get used to it sooner or later. They had to believe sooner or later.
Every man in Ilion who can hold a spear without tripping over it, or so it seems,
Tomoran said with a glum expression. He was as eager to fight the Ilioners as any Tyran. The two nations had hated each other since they were wrested from the wreckage of Utter Hawkwing's empire. Their history was one of wars fought on the slightest excuse. But he seemed a little less likely than the other High Lords to think every battle could be won by one good charge.
Every scout that makes it back reports the camps larger, with more formidable defenses.
We should move now, my Lord Dragon,
Wireman said forcefully.
The light burned my soul. I can catch the Ilioners with their breeches around their ankles. They've tied themselves down. Why, they hardly have any horse at all. I'll crush them in detail, and the way will be open to the city.
In Ilion, as in Tyr and Kyrian, the city was the city that had given the nation its name.
Burn my eyes. I will put your banner over Ilion in a month, my Lord Dragon. 2, at the most.
Glancing at the Karienin, he added, as if the words were being pulled from him,
Samaradrid and I will.
Samaradrid bowed slightly, very slightly.
No,
Rand said curtly. Wireman's was a plan for disaster. A good 250 miles lay between the camp and Samael's great hill forts across a plain of grass, where a 50-foot rise was considered a tall hill and a thicket of 2 hides a forest. Samael had scouts, too. Any rat or raven could be one of Samael's scouts. 250 miles. 12 or 13 days for the Tyrans and Kyrianin, with luck. The Aiel could make it in perhaps 5, if they pushed. A lone scout or two moved faster than an army, even among Aiel. But they were no part of Wireman's design. Long before Wireman reached the Dwarlon Hills, Samael will be ready to crush the Tyran, not the other way around. A fool plan, even more foolish than the one Rand had given them.
I've given your orders. You hold here until Matt arrives to take command, and even then, no one moves a foot until I think I have enough numbers here. There are more men on their way, Tyrans, Kyrianin, Aiel. I mean to smash Samael, Wireman. Smash him forever. And bring Ilion under the dragon banner.
That much was true.
I only wish I could be with you, but Andor requires my attention yet.
Wireman's face became sour stone. Samaradrid's grimace should have turned the wine in his punch to vinegar, and Tomoran wore such a lack of expression that his disapproval was plain as a fist in the nose. In Samaradrid's case, it was the delay that worried. He had pointed out more than once that if every day brought more men to the camp here, it also brought more to the forts in Ilion. No doubt Wireman's plan was the result of his urgings, though he would have made it better. Tomaran's doubts centered on Matt. Despite what he had heard from Kyrianen of Matt's skill in battle, Tomaran thought it flattery from fools for a countryman who happened to be a friend of the Dragon Reborn. They were honest objections, and Samaradrid's even had validity. If the plan they had been given had been more than another screen. It was unlikely Samael depended entirely on rats and ravens for his spying. Rand expected there were human spies in the camp for other Forsaken as well, and probably for the Aes Sedai.
"It shall be as you say, my lord dragon," Wireman said heavily.
The man was brave enough when it came to battle, but a pure blind idiot, unable to think beyond the glory of the charge, his hatred of Ilioners, his contempt for Kyrianen and Aiel savages. Rand was sure Wireman was exactly the man he needed. Tomoran and Samaradrid would not move too soon, so long as Wireman held the command. For a long while further they talked, and Rand listened, asking occasional questions. There was no more opposition, no more suggestions that the attack be made now, no discussion of the attack at all. What Rand questioned Wireman and the others about was wagons. Wagons, and what was in them. The plains of Moredo had few villages and far between, no city except Far Matting in the north, and barely enough farmland to feed the people already there. A huge army would need a constant stream of wagons out of Tyr, bringing everything from flour for bread to nails for horseshoes. Except for Tolmaron, the High Lords were of the opinion that the army could carry what it needed to cross the plain, and then could live off Ilion. There seemed to be a certain relish in the thought of stripping their ancient enemies' lands to the ground like a swarm of locusts. The Kyrianen had a different opinion, especially Samaradrid and Meneril. Not only commoners had gone hungry during Kyrian's civil war and the Shido's siege of their capital. Their hollow cheeks spoke eloquently of that. Ilion was a fat land, and even the Dwarlan Hills held farms and vineyards, but Samaradrid and Meneril did not want to trust their soldiers' bellies to uncertain forage if there was another way. As for Rand, he did not want Ilion ravaged any more than could not be avoided. He did not really press anyone. Suneman assured him the wagons were being assembled, and he had long since learned his lesson about telling Rand one thing and doing another. Supplies were being gathered all across Tyr, despite Wireman's grimaces of impatience with the whole notion, and Torian's sweaty mutters about the expense. The important thing, though, was that the plan he had given them was going forward, and would be seen to be going forward. Leave-taking involved more grandiose prattle and elaborate bows while he rewound the shufa around his head and took up the dragon scepter again, with half-hearted invitations to stay for a banquet and equally insincere offers to attend him to his departure if he could not remain to eat the feast they would have prepared. Tyrin or Kyrianen, they avoided the company of the dragon reborn as much as they safely could without losing his favor, while pretending they did no such thing. Most especially, they wanted to be elsewhere when he channeled. They did escort him to the entrance, and a few steps outside, of course, but Suneman sighed audibly when he left, and Rand heard Torian actually giggling in relief. The Aiel chiefs went with Rand silently, and the maidens outside joined Sulin and the other three in making a ring around the six men as they started toward the green-striped tent. This time, there were only a few cheers, and the chiefs said nothing. They had said almost as little back in the pavilion. When Rand commented on it, Derek said, "These wetlanders do not want to hear us." He was a husky man, within a finger width of Rand's height, with a big nose and paler streaks prominent in his golden hair. His blue eyes were filled with contempt. "They hear only the wind." "Did they tell you of those who rebel against you?" Aram asked. Taller than Derek, he had a pugnacious jaw and almost as much white as red in his hair. "They did," Rand said, and Han frowned at him.
"If you are sending these tyrants after their own kind, it is a mistake. Even if they could be trusted, I do not think they could do it. Send the spears. One clan would be enough and more." Rand shook his head. "Darlin and his rebels can wait.
Samael is what's important.
Then let us go to Ilion now, Geron said. Forget these wetlanders, Randall Thor. Already there are nearly 200,000 spears gathered here. We can destroy the Ilianas before Wyrim and Santiago, and Samara Drid Maravin can be halfway there.
For a moment, Rand squeezed his eyes shut. Was everyone going to argue with him? These were not men who would give way to frown from the Dragon Reborn. The Dragon Reborn was only a wetlander prophecy. They followed He Who Comes with the Dawn, the Karakarn. And as he had long since grown tired of hearing, even the Karakarn was not a king. I want your word to stay here until Matt tells you to move. A promise from each of you.
We will stay, Randall Thor.
Bruan's deceptively mild voice had a tight edge. The others' agreements came in harder voices, but they came.
But it is wasting time, Han added, twisting his mouth. May I never know shade if it is not.
Geron and Arim nodded. Rand had not expected them to give in so quickly.
Now and then you have to waste time to save it, he said, and Han snorted.
Back at the green-striped tent, the Thunderwalkers had lifted up the sides on poles, letting the breeze blow through the shaded interior. Hot and dry as it was, the Aiel seemed to find it refreshing. Rand did not think he sweated a drop less than he had in the sun. He pulled off the shufa as he settled to the layered rugs, with Bruan and the other chiefs facing him. The maidens added their number to the Thunderwalkers around the tent. Every so often, banter between them drifted in, and laughter at it. This time Lyron seemed to be getting the better of it. At least, the maidens rattled spears against bucklers at him twice. Rand understood almost none of it. Thumbing his short-stemmed pipe full of tabak, he passed the goatskin pouch around for the chiefs to fill their pipes. He had found a small cask of good Two Rivers leaf in Camelin, then channeled his alight while they sent a Thunderwalker for a burning twig from one of the cook fires. When all the pipes were lit, they settled down to talk, puffing contentedly. The conversation lasted fully as long as his discussion with the lords, not because there was that much to talk about, but because Rand had talked alone with the wetlanders. Aiel were touchy about honor. Their lives were governed by Jiato, honor and obligation, with rules as complex and odd as their humor. They talked of the Aiel still on their way down from Kyrian, of when Matt would arrive, and of what, if anything, should be done about the Shido. They talked about hunting and women, and whether brandy was as good as Usquai, and about humor. Even patient Bruan finally spread his hands in surrender and gave up trying to explain Aiel jokes. What under the light was funny about a woman stabbing her husband by accident, whatever the circumstances, or a man ending up married to the sister of the woman he wanted to marry? Han grumped and snorted and refused to believe Rand did not understand. He laughed so hard at the one about the stabbing that he nearly fell over. The one thing they did not talk about was the coming war with Ilion. When they left, Rand stood squinting at the sun halfway down toward the horizon. Han was repeating the story about the stabbing, and the departing chiefs chuckled over it again. Tapping his pipe out on the heel of his palm, Rand ground the dottle underfoot in the dust. There was still time to return to Camelin and meet Bashir, but he went back inside the tent and sat watching the sun sink. As it touched the horizon, turning red as blood, Anila and Samara brought him a plate of mutton stew, heaped high enough for two men, a round loaf of bread and a pitcher of mint tea that had been set in a bucket of water to cool. "You do not eat enough," Samara said, trying to smooth his hair before he moved his head away. Anila eyed him. If you did not avoid Avienda so, she would see that you ate.
He attracts her interest, then runs from her, Samara muttered.
You must attract her again. Why do you not offer to wash her hair?
He should not be that forward, Anila said firmly. Asking to brush her hair will be more than enough. He does not want her to think him forward.
Samara sniffed. She will not think he is forward when he runs from her. You can be too modest, Randall Thor.
You do realize that neither of you is my mother, don't you?
The two cotton-sore-clad women looked at each other in confusion.
Do you think this is another Wetlander joke? Anila asked, and Samara shrugged. I do not know. He does not look amused. She patted Rand on the back. I am sure it was a good joke, but you must explain it to us.
Rand suffered in silence, grinding his teeth, while they watched him eat. They literally watched every spoonful. Matters became no better when they left him with his plate and Sulin joined him. Sulin had some blunt and most improper advice on how he could attract Avienda's notice. Among the Aiel, it was the sort of thing a first sister might do for a first